The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book Month by Month Gardening in the Carolinas by Bob Polomsky. And we left off last time where we are in August, and we are at the care of, and now we start with perennials and ornamental grasses. If you're going on vacation this month, have someone take care of your flower beds while you're away. Deadhead phlox to prevent the flowers from going to seed. The seedlings do not come true to the color of the parent, and often their sheer numbers overtakes a planting, giving you the impression that the flowers from the parents have magically changed color. A disbud chrysanthemums to produce fewer but larger blooms. Most mums, except spray types, respond well to disbudding. To disbud, pinch off the side buds that form in the angles of the leaves along the main stem. Leave only the large top bud. The plant will channel its energy into this bud, which will develop into impressive proportions. For shrubs and trees, remember the three D's when visiting the garden. Damaged, diseased, or dead twigs must go. Hold off on major pruning until late winter. Major pruning will only stimulate tender new growth, which can be killed off by our first freeze. Remove any suckers from the rootstocks of grafted roses. The leaves on these shoots will look different from the grafted variety. And from roses, if you rested your roses last month, mountain and Piedmont gardeners can jumpstart every bloomers into growth for a full flowering display. Coastal plain gardeners can wait until later this month or early next month. For vines and ground covers, collect seeds from annual vines and store them for planting next year. Actively growing vines may need to be secured to their mooring. Vines that do not have tendrils will have to be tied with soft twine. Check the fastening on other shoots to see that the stems aren't being girdled. And for water gardens, inspect the submerged plants in your pool and thin them out if necessary. Compost them or recycle them in the vegetable garden as mulch. Trim off spent flowers and clip away any leaves that may be in the water. The leaves and other organic matter can break down in the water, especially in hot weather, and can harm plants and fish. Clean the surface of the pond of debris to prevent it from sinking to the bottom and fouling the water. And our next topic is watering. And for annuals, check the soil in flower beds to determine if you need to water. Water deeply to wet the entire root zone of the plants. Container-grown flowers can dry out quickly, especially when located in full sun. Feel the soil in containers at least once a day to check for moisture. When water is necessary, apply it long enough so that it runs out of the drainage holes. Keep in mind that clay pots will need to be watered more often than plastic pots. Also, small pots will dry out faster than large planters. Check hanging baskets daily in the summer. Wind and sun dry them much more quickly than plants in other kinds of containers. And for bulbs, water regularly and thoroughly. During hot, dry August days, avoid deep cultivation in your flower beds. Loosening the soil under these conditions reduces water uptake by increasing loss of soil water and damaging surface roots. For edibles, watering properly is critical in the heat of summer. Slow, deep soakings are best done with trickle irrigation or soaker hoses. For lawns, water dormant lawns every 3 weeks in the absence of rain, or take your chances knowing that reseeding may be necessary in the fall. Water only those areas that really need it. For perennials, during periods of low or no rainfall, water plants, especially new plantings, when they need it and not by the calendar. When you do water, do a thorough job so water permeates the soil deeply. Wait until the soil becomes dry in the upper inch or so before watering again. Avoid irrigating your perennials with an overhead sprinkler. In addition to wasting water and watering weeds, wetting the leaves will encourage disease. Mulch to decrease weeds and conserve moisture. Inspect the mulch in flower beds. If wind, rain, and natural decay have reduced its thickness to an inch or less, apply more mulch to raise the levels to 2 to 3 inches. Mulch conserves moisture, suppresses weed growth, and makes those weeds that do grow easier to pull out. For shrubs, trees, and vines and ground cover, if the soil is dry and near the root balls of newly planted shrubs, give them a good thorough soaking. Check the soil before watering and look at the plant to see if water is necessary. When you water, water deeply and thoroughly wet the soil. Coastal gardeners who have saline water will benefit from drip irrigation systems. They use less water to moisten the root zones of your plants, thus putting less salt in the soil. Planting your shrubs in raised beds will also make it easier to flush out accumulated salts with irrigation water and rainfall. And for water gardens, check the level of your pond to see if it has dropped. Tap water shouldn't be added directly to a water garden containing fish because the chlorine is toxic to them. If you add less than an inch of tap water to your pool, a dechlorinating agent won't be necessary. For larger amounts, a dechlorinating chemical will have to be added. And our next topic is fertilize. For annuals, if they haven't been fertilized in over 6 weeks, leggy plants that were cut back will benefit from a light feeding with a fast-release fertilizer. Apply a water-soluble fertilizer, such as 20-20-20, to a container grown annuals according to label directions. Water the soil first and then apply the fertilizer. For bulbs, Piedmont and coastal plain gardeners can lightly fertilize bearded lilies, bearded irises, Louisiana irises, and Siberian irises early this month with a low nitrogen fertilizer such as 5-10-10. Water the fertilizer in afterward. Edibles. Feed basil with a liquid fertilizer to keep it productive into fall. Trim off seed heads and flowers so the plants will spend their energy on flavorful foliage. For lawns, avoid over-fertilizing centipede grass, which can lead to centipede decline as a result of excessive thatch. And for perennials and ornamental grasses, be cautious about fertilizing. Unless the leaves look pale or off color, fertilizing won't be necessary. Avoid excessive fertilization. It produces the soft, succulent growth favored by pests. Never skimp on building up the natural fertility of the soil with applications of organic mulches such as compost. And for roses, depending on fertility of your soil, every blooming roses may require a little boost from a fast-release fertilizer. Follow label directions to determine the amount to apply. For shrubs, trees, vines, and ground covers, if you established a need for fertilizing and you're willing to provide adequate moisture for roots to grow and absorb the applied minerals, use a slow-release fertilizer. Otherwise, wait until next spring when new growth begins. And for water gardening, fertilize floating-leaved plants with slow-release aquatic plant tablets available from water garden suppliers. Bury the tablets in the soil so the fertilizer will be available to the roots and not leach out into the water, which can stimulate the growth of algae. Bog plants can be fertilized based on their growth rate and appearance. To play it safe, fertilize them at half the rate of your water lilies. And our next topic is problem solving. For annuals, be on the lookout for aphids and spider mites. Plants infested by spider mites have faded, stippled leaves. Remove these pests with a strong spray of water. Resort to a pesticide if their numbers are high and damage is great. If these plants are going to be removed and replaced by cool season annuals, spraying with a pesticide may be unnecessary. Nematodes may threaten your plants as well. Fungal leaf spots, powdery mildew, and other diseases could be afflicting your warm season annuals. Evaluate the extent of damage to determine if a fungicide of application is necessary. Heavily infested plants should be removed and discarded. Avoid wetting the leaves when watering to limit the spread of diseases. Control weeds by hand pulling and maintaining a layer of mulch. Keeping the beds weed-free will also remove overwintering sites for spider mites. And for bulbs, spider mites are especially troublesome during the hot, dry weather of this month. Watch out for powdery mildew, warm, humid days, and cool night temperatures in the milder areas of the Carolinas favor the growth of this grayish-white foliar disease. Hand pull any weeds and suppress their growth with a layer of mulch. Watch out for particularly aggressive weeds such as ground ivy and Indian mock strawberry. And for edibles, pests reach record numbers in the fall months. Remove old plants that have stopped producing to eliminate shelters for insects and disease organisms. Nematodes can be a problem with vegetables. Remove and discard infected plants. Watch for signs of leaf-footed bugs and spider mites. Gummy stem blight is a fungal disease that mostly infects cantaloupes, cucumbers, and watermelons in the coastal plain. Look for brown lesions on leaves and stems. If the stem is infected, the vine beyond the lesion will wither and die. Pull out and destroy infected vines. Remove and discard crop debris at the end of the growing season. Rotate with other vegetables other than vine crops or melons for 2 years. Avoid wetting the leaves when watering. Fungicides are available. And for lawns, if your lawn looks wilted even after watering, if it's been torn up by skunks, birds, and moles, or if parts have turned brown and feel spongy, check for a white grub infestation. White grubs are the larvae of scarab beetles, including Japanese beetles, mask chafers, and May and June beetles. They have plump, cream-colored, C-shaped bodies and distinctive yellow or to brown heads. Most have life cycles lasting from several months to 3 years. The Japanese beetle is the most common. Adult females lay their eggs in the soil around July. 2 weeks later, the grub hatch and begin feeding on grass roots. The most serious damage occurs in September and October before hibernation and during April and May before the larvae pupate to become adults. Make cuts on three sides of a 12-inch square of damaged area. Pry this flap back and examine the roots and upper 3 inches of soil. Count the number of grubs. Move on to another patch. After several samples, determine the average number of grubs. Most healthy lawns can tolerate 10 Japanese beetle grubs per square foot. If your count is higher, an insecticide may be needed. Look for brown patch disease on tall fescue. And check for gray leaf spot disease on St. Augustine's grass. Collect infected clippings and compost them. Use a slow-release nitrogen fertilizer to reduce gray leaf spot problems. Apply herbicides to your lawn for winter annual or perennial weeds that germinate or form rosettes in fall. Check herbicide labels before using. If annual bluegrass and other winter weeds are a problem in spring, control them now. Apply a pre-emergent herbicide to prevent them from appearing this fall. The red imported fire ant was introduced into the United States as early as 1918. Because it's not native to this country, fire ants have no competitors, parasites, or predators. They produce unsightly mounds, and their painful stings pose a health threat, particularly to young children and older people. If fire ants are in your landscape, control them with the two-step method. For next, it's perennials and ornamental grasses. Trim any dead, damaged diseases or insect-infested leaves. To improve their appearance, deadhead the spent flowers from garden phlox, obedient plants, perennial salvia, pincushion flower, purple cornflower, and sneezeweed. Be on the lookout for aphids and spider mites. Remove these pests with a strong spray of water from the hose. Resort to a pesticide if their numbers are high and damage is great. Fungal leaf spots, powdery mildew, and other diseases could be afflicting your perennials. Evaluate the extent of damage to determine if a fungicide application is necessary. Remove and discard heavily infested plants. Control weeds by hand pulling and maintaining a shallow layer of mulch. Prevent the weeds from going to seed by removing the flowers. Any seeds that can be eliminated now will not have to be dealt with next year. For roses, inspect your roses for Japanese beetles, rose aphids, and spider mites. Evaluate the extent of injury and decide on the level of control. Should you resort to hand-picking Japanese beetles? Or is the infestation bad enough that you should cover the roses with a cheesecloth or netting? Are they present in such high numbers that chemical control is the best course of action? Coastal plain gardeners confronted with root knot nematodes should plant roses grafted onto Rosa fortuninia, a rootstock highly recommended for sandy southeastern soils. This heat-tolerant rootstock is resistant to root knot nematodes. Unfortunately, roses on these rootstocks can be difficult to find. Your best bet is to buy them from companies that specify the rootstock used. Watch out for black spot and powdery mildew. Warm, humid days and cool night temperatures favor the growth of powdery mildew. Rose mosaic virus is the most common viral disease of roses. Symptoms usually occur on new growth. Look for crinkly, deformed leaves, misshapen buds and flowers, leaves with blotches of yellow, ring patterns of light green, yellow lines, or a mottling of different shades of green. Rose mosaic virus makes a rose less vigorous, reduces the size and number of flowers, and sometimes deforms them. The plant is stunted and the bud graft may fail, killing the top variety and leaving the root stock. Rose mosaic is systemic, meaning that it can be found in all parts of the plant except the few cells at the tips of the growing points. Infected plants may decline in vigor and become stunted, so your only course of action is to remove them. Pruning away the afflicted areas will not remove the virus from your rose. There are no chemicals that cure a virus-infected plant or any that protect plants from becoming infected. This particular virus spreads through the propagation of infected plants as when virus-infected plant material is budded or grafted to a healthy plant. Because there is little natural spread of rose mosaic viruses, plants that develop mosaic symptoms in the rose garden do not need to be replaced as long as their growth is acceptable. The only control for viruses is prevention, so avoid purchasing plants showing mosaic symptoms. The industry is taking steps to rid rose cultivars of viruses. The plants are extensively tested to be sure that the virus is not detected in the treated material. Plants that pass the test are used to propagate virus-free stock. Hand pull grassy and broadleaf weeds from your rose beds. Maintain a shallow mulch layer to suppress their growth. And shrubs. Spider mites are very active during hot, dry weather. Their feeding injury results in discolored, bronze-colored leaves. Check for mites by tapping a branch onto a white sheet of paper and looking for moving specks. Natural predators can control spider mite populations, and you can also wash off mites with a strong stream of water. Red-headed azalea caterpillars devour entire leaves and completely defoliate branches. Identify this caterpillar by its red head and yellow stripes. When disturbed, it curls backward into a defensive posture. Hand-pick the caterpillars and discard them in a jar of soapy water. Bacillus thuringiensis is a biological insecticide that will control young caterpillars. Other insecticides are available and can be applied to control heavy infestations. Remove the silken needle-covered bags of bagworms on pines, junipers, hemlocks, arborvita, and other evergreens. Weak-looking, stunted plants may be infested with nematodes. Determine the identity of the nematodes attacking your plant and consider outsmarting them by growing resistant shrubs. Wilted, dying plants may be a symptom of phytophthora, root rot. Although this fungal disease is often found in wet or poorly drained sites, it will attack plants in fairly dry sites if they are planted too deeply. Overwatering plants also favors attacks by this disease. And trees. Spider mites are very active during hot weather, dry weather, especially on junipers, hollies, and many other ornamentals. Feeding injury results in discolored, bronzy leaves. Check for mites by tapping a branch onto a white sheet of paper and looking for moving specks. natural predators can control spider mite populations. A strong spray of water from the hose applied to the undersides of the leaves will dislodge the adults during the growing season. An insecticidal soap, neem oil, or miticide will also be effective, although repeated applications may be necessary. The leaves on deciduous trees will be falling in the next few months, so infected leaves may not require attention at this time because they're going to be shed soon. Powdery mildew diseases attack a great many ornamentals, most often in late summer when the days are warm and the nights are cool. Prevention is the first defense. Grow powdery mildew-resistant varieties. Prune plants to improve air circulation and sunlight penetration. Reduce fertilizer applications to avoid excessive late-season growth. Cercospora leaf spot is a common disease of crepe myrtles that becomes noticeable this month and next. Diseased leaves have brown lesions that eventually turn yellow to red in color and then are quickly shed. The following cultivars are resistant to powdery mildew and Cercospora leaf spot. That's Cuscarora, Tuskegee, Tonto, and Fantasy Japanese Crepe Myrtle. And vines and undergrounds. Ground covers. Inspect your vines and ground covers for aphids and spider mites. Evaluate the extent of injury and take action if the health of the vine or ground cover is in jeopardy. Watch out for the leaf spot diseases. Infected leaves can be trimmed out and discarded. Several severe infection can be treated with a fungicide. If fungicides are required on a regular basis, plan on replacing the vine. And for water gardens, your aquatic plants may be attacked by insects. Cut off any infested plant parts. Remove the offenders by submerging them in the water and giving them a shake. Handpick brown snails from iris leaves. Trim away any dead, damaged, or diseased leaves. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. And we hope you'll join us again soon. Thank you.